It's 6 hours, what's the universe of time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa, coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Steve Norman reporting, topping the news, breakthrough in the U.S.-India nuclear deadlock. On day one of President Obama's three-day visit to India, he and Prime Minister Narendra Modi unveiled a new deal that would boost civilian nuclear trade between the two countries.
Today we achieved a breakthrough understanding on two issues that were holding up our ability to advance our civil nuclear cooperation, and we're committed to moving towards full implementation. And this is an important step that shows how we can work together to elevate our relationship.
Two issues had brought a 2008 nuclear deal to a standstill. They are the liability of suppliers to India in case of a nuclear accident and tracking the whereabouts of American-supplied fuel. The new deal resolves those differences and unlocks billions of dollars in nuclear trade between the two largest democracies in the world. Today, Mr. Obama will be the first American leader to attend India's Republic Day celebrations. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry urged rival political camps in Nigeria to respect the outcome of presidential elections next month.
Given the stakes, it's absolutely critical that these elections be conducted peacefully, that they are credible, transparent, accountable, so that the people of Nigeria can have faith, and the world can have faith in the government that flows from it.
Secretary Kerry, who arrived Sunday in Nigerian city of Lagos, spoke shortly after Nigerian troops repelled an attack by Boko Haram militants on the outskirts of the Borno state capital, Maiduguri. New round of talks between rival Libyan factions is planned in Geneva, and a new push. The UN mission in Libya says two rounds of talks will take place this week. Thousands flocked to the streets of Athens on Sunday evening to celebrate the Syriza's party victory and national elections and cheer for its leader, Alexis Tsipras. Addressing several thousand supporters, Tsipras claimed a mandate to overturn the painful austerity policies imposed on Athens by international creditors. Some observers believe Tsipras's political party might have to form a coalition government, but it appears the government of incumbent Prime Minister Antonis Samaras is on its way out. Tsipras has promised to negotiate a deal with the European Commission, European Central Bank, and the International Monetary Fund, and write off much of Greece's $320 billion euro debt, which has more than 175% of gross domestic product, is the world's second largest after Japan. President Obama is blaming Russia for an attack by Ukrainian separatists that's left at least 30 people dead and the port city of Mariupol, casting further doubt on the viability of last year's ceasefire with the Kiev government. VOA's Michael Bowman reports.
Devastation in Mariupol after a rebel rocket bombardment prompted sharp comments by President Obama on a visit to India.
We are deeply concerned about the latest break in the ceasefire and the aggression that these separatists, with Russian backing, Russian equipment, Russian financing, Russian training, and Russian troops, are conducting. And we will continue to take the approach that we've taken in the past, which is to ratchet up the pressure on Russia.
Ukrainian President Petro Poroshenko was even more blunt, blaming the attack on terrorists supported by Russia. Michael Bowman, VOA News, Washington.
Diplomats are saying the U.N. Security Council will hold emergency meetings later today on the crises in Ukraine and Yemen. Council member Lithuania said Sunday that it had requested an open meeting on Ukraine, both countries' former Soviet republics. Russia blocked a council statement Saturday that would have condemned the shelling the day in the Ukrainian city of Mariupol that killed at least 30 people, wounded more than 90 others. Britain says council members will be briefed on Yemen as well, where the Western-backed president resigned last week after Shiite rebels who occupy the capital surrounded his house. The country there remains leaderless. In sports news, Serena Williams avenged her heaviest Grand Slam defeat with a comeback win over Garbini Muguruza today to reach the Australian Open tennis quarterfinals. Top-ranked Williams will next play Dominika Sibulkova.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, January 26th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Secretary of State John Kerry visits Nigeria and promises U.S. support in a fight against Boko Haram.
One of the issues they discuss is about how to deepen cooperation between Nigeria and the neighboring countries to tackle the threat of terrorism within the region, and particularly also the threat of Boko Haram inside Nigeria.
Ruben Abate is the spokesman for Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan. Next month's Nigeria election poses a potential conflict in religiously split Kaduna State. Zambia's sixth president has been sworn in. Congo's government claimed victory after lawmakers Sunday approved a controversial electoral legislation, and the World Health Organization admits it was too slow to respond to the Ebola crisis in West Africa.
Ebola is a tragedy that has taught the world, including WHO, many lessons, also about how to prevent similar events in the future.
Margaret Chan is the WHO Director General, and the interim government in the Central African Republic marks 1 year this month. Those stories plus Mark Omar's posts and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry says the United States will continue to support the Nigerian military in the fight against Boko Haram. Mr. Kerry, who arrived Sunday in the Nigerian city of Lagos, spoke shortly after Nigerian troops repelled an attack by Boko Haram militants on the outskirts of the Borno state capital of Maiduguri. Presidential spokesman Ruben Abate says Mr. Jonathan reaffirmed Nigeria's strong commitment to working with the United States and to the proposed new regional force to fight terrorism.
One of the issues they discuss is about how to deepen cooperation between Nigeria and the neighboring countries to tackle the threat of terrorism within the region, and particularly also the threat of Boko Haram inside Nigeria. Both President Jonathan and Secretary Kerry talked about the need for the deepening of this partnership and Nigeria's readiness to continue to work with its neighbors and America's readiness to continue to provide all necessary assistance to deal with this threat to human civilization and to the West African sub-region and the whole world.
Nigerians go to the poll in 2015. Did they address the issue of the election in their discussion?
Senator Kerry indicated President Obama's keen interest in the outcome of that election, stating very clearly that, you know, the election is important not just for Africans or Nigerians, but also is an election in which the whole world has a lot of interest. And President Jonathan reassured President Obama through Senator Kerry that, look, Nigeria remains committed to ensuring free, fair, and credible elections, and that the Jonathan administration will ensure that every assistance, every resource is made available to the relevant institution, the Electoral Commission, to ensure that the elections are indeed very successful. In this regard also, Senator Kerry referred to the Abuja Accord, which was the accord that was entered into by all the political parties and the presidential candidates to ensure that there will be no violence during the elections. And President Jonathan made it clear that he and his party remain committed to that accord, and that every party, every stakeholder, must respect the terms of that accord.
Mr. Abate, as you mentioned, Secretary Kerry and the President talk about U.S. assistance against terrorism. His visit came just in time when Boko Haram, we understand, again, has taken over another town in your country. The opposition has blamed your government of doing nothing.
Well, you know that the opposition is looking for votes, and this is a period leading up to the campaign. So the opposition has consistently tried to politicize the Boko Haram threat. But the position of government is that dealing with the threat of insurgency and terrorism is a national challenge requiring a bipartisan approach. So our message consistently to the opposition has always been that it's in the national interest for every Nigerian to work together, whatever may be their political, religious, or ethnic affiliation, to ensure that we all come together to fight this dimension of global terror called Boko Haram, which remains a threat in our country.
Rumi Abate is the spokesman for Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan. He was speaking with me from the capital, Abuja. Nigeria's Middle Belt has long been the site of fighting between Muslims and Christians, as well as between people of different ethnic groups. As the February elections approach, community and religious leaders in the north-central state of Kaduna are making plans that they hope will keep the streets calm after results are announced. Chris Stein reports from Kaduna City, Kaduna.
In Kaduna's Tudunwada neighborhood, mosques dot the skyline and schoolgirls keep their faces covered. Like many neighborhoods in the northern half of Kaduna, a city in Nigeria's religiously mixed middle belt, Tudunwada is majority Muslim. Across the Kaduna River, the city's southern half is home mostly to Christians. People of the two religions move freely and conduct business across the bridges that connect the city. But violence after Nigeria's 2011 elections deepened the divide between the two communities. Rioting broke out in Kaduna City, and many of the Christians who lived in Tudunwada fled for communities on the other side of the bridge. In the state's rural southeast, Muslims were killed or chased out of entire neighborhoods.
The Middle Belt is, as the name implies, is the Middle Belt of Nigeria. And it is the religious doldrum of the winds. Christianity coming from the south and Islam coming from the north, and both meeting there. And I see this strongly as an issue that violence may occur around the fault line.
Pastor James Wuye and other faith leaders hope they can prevent the type of violence that broke out after the 2011 polls, when President Goodluck Jonathan defeated his main opposition challenger, Muhammadu Buhari. Both are running again in this year's vote. Many in Tudunwada say local people did not trust the 2011 results, fueling the violence that forced Christians out of the neighborhood. Electrician Umaru Hassan says it was not just a religious issue.
Somebody cannot just immediate a result of the violence is either in the religious aspect. It's part of the isolation of the people within the country that they have not seen being treated fairly.
Alhaji Alatu Alkali is district head of Tudunwada. He says traditional leaders and the government are trying to generate jobs for young people to prevent the frustration that leads to violence.
Whenever we go for a meeting at the Zazo Emirate, the emir normally tells us, tell people to learn how to live in peace with one another.
Local leaders have also tried to organize events to bring people from both communities together, such as football matches. Whether their efforts succeed will only be known after February 14th, when Nigerians elect their next president. Chris Stein for VOA News, Kaduna.
Edgar Lungu of the ruling Patriotic Front Party was sworn in Sunday as Zambia's sixth president following a closely fought election. Zambians voted Tuesday for a successor to President Michael Sata, who died in October last year. The new leader takes the helm of the copper-rich country for the remainder of Mr. Sata's term before the country returns to the polls in September 2016. Gillian Parker reports from Johannesburg.
Edgar Lungu from the ruling Patriotic Front Party clinched the presidential seat by a slender margin, beating his closest rival, Akhende Hichilema, from the United Party for National Development. The tall, slim former lawyer, who describes himself as an ordinary Zambian of humble beginnings, helped form the PF with Michael Sata in 2001. When the party first came to power in 2011, he held a junior position in disaster management, but climbed the ranks to become Justice and Defence Minister, leading the country in Mr. Sata's absence last year. A lawyer who requested anonymity described his former colleague as the strong, quiet type, telling VOA in Lusaka that Mr. Lungu was driven by his discipleship to Mr. Sata, which allowed him to stay in the inner circle of the Patriotic Front. Mr. Lungu's presidential campaign tapped into the sympathy and popular support for President Sata, promising to fulfil the late president's ambitious development mandate. He will also have to unify a party that was badly fractured by a power struggle following Mr. Sata's death, says political analyst Alex Ngoma.
One would expect Lungu in the first place to try and bring all the factions together in a unity of purpose so as to strengthen the party's position. But beyond the party itself, I think that Lungu will have to continue along the same path that was walked by the late President Michael Chirusha Sata. He has to make sure that the country has a new constitution before 2016. He has to make sure that this unprecedented infrastructure development that Michael has started is not halted.
The new president will have to work hard to trim excessive public spending and shelter Zambia's stuttering economy from falling copper prices. The metal accounts for about 70% of Zambia's exports and 13% of its gross domestic product. But at current prices, the industry is barely viable. Gillian Parker for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Today's Monday, the 26th day of January, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 16 minutes past the hour. A spokesman for the Democratic Republic of Congo's government says Sunday's Senate approval of a controversial legislation about upcoming election was a defeat for opponents of President Joseph Kabila, who he said were planning a coup d'etat. The ruling majority agreed to remove articles in the proposed law that require the completion of a vast consensus before the next scheduled election in 2016, a move that the opposition said would have allowed President Kabila to extend his stay in power. But Information Minister Lambert Mende said it was an easy decision for President Kabila to change his version of the proposed law because the president had said all along he had no intention of changing the constitution.
We took the initiative to change our version of the law, and we are happy that the parliament followed it and to end these irrelevant disputes, because they wanted to create just a misunderstanding without reason. So since we were not at all fond of changing anything in the constitution, that is why it was easy for us to change our version, and it worked.
Mr. Kamari, the opposition leader, is claiming victory.
I don't think that this was what he was looking for. He was looking for ousting our leader, looking for to transform us in a kind of Burkina Faso sort of, and he failed to do so. So there is no reason for him to claim any victory. The institution is there, strong as before, so he failed in this coup d'etat sort of he tried to do.
Why did it take long for you to change your version of the legislation? Why do so many people have to die?
It is our right, my dear. We are talking of democracy. I don't know who will give us the timetable to tell us you should change after so many days or so many hours. We change when we think that we should change. And we didn't see anything that was against the public interest in our first version. Because of the misunderstanding, we changed, and nobody has to tell us when we should have changed.
The new legislation does not say whether President Kabila intends to run again, because if he does, this will be in violation.
He didn't tell anybody that he's likely to run again. Talking of somebody, you better hear what himself is saying of himself. He's telling you since the beginning that he will respect the Constitution. His adversary, the one you cited, is spreading lies that he won't respect the Constitution. And you are ignoring what he is telling you about himself and following only the lies of his enemy. I don't understand that way of interpreting things.
Does your government feel that these demonstrations had some kind of foreign backing, or this was just a domestic uprising against this legislation?
It was not even against the legislation, my dear. You don't demonstrate against the legislation by looting, by killing the policemen, by destroying public property. It was a coup attempt, in fact, and then we defeated it.
Lambert Mende is Information Minister of the Democratic Republic of Congo. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kinshasa. The World Health Organization admits it was too slow in tackling the Ebola crisis in West Africa, leading to the epidemic spiraling out of control. Health experts from around the world are debating measures to reform the agency's response to global public health emergencies in a special one-day session on Ebola. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
The World Health Organization continues to be criticized for slow response and ignoring warnings from organizations such as Doctors Without Borders about the magnitude of the Ebola outbreak in West Africa. WHO Director General Margaret Chan admitted to delegates attending the special Ebola session her agency did not respond as vigorously as it should have.
The world, including WHO, was too slow to see what was unfolding before us. Ebola is a tragedy that has taught the world, including WHO, many lessons, also about how to prevent similar events in the future. Never again should the world be caught by surprise, unprepared.
The WHO says Ebola has claimed more than 8,600 lives and infected more than 21,700 people, mainly in Guinea, Sierra Leone, and Liberia. Sierra Leone nurse Rebecca Johnson, an Ebola survivor, understands the horrors inflicted by the disease. She says early treatment saved her life, and after 3 weeks, she was given a certificate noting she was Ebola-free.
However, many people do treat me as if I have Ebola. I was stigmatized and still stigmatized by people in my community. I sometimes sit at quiet places and cry. My final message to people out there is this. Even though there is no certain cure for Ebola, early treatment is your best chance at survival.
UN Special Envoy on Ebola, David Nabarro, says the UN system must be prepared to respond quickly and basic public health techniques must be adopted.
My experience to date tells me that for responses to have the greatest chance of success, they must be strategic, strong, and speedy.
The World Health Organization says the Ebola outbreak highlights the need to rebuild and strengthen national and international emergency preparedness and response. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
This month marks the first anniversary of the Central African Republic interim government headed by Catherine Samba Panza. Elected as sectarian violence raged across the country, she has a huge task to end the civil war and put the country back on the right track. From Bangui, Emily Yop looks back at Samba Panza's 1 year in office.
She had pledged to bring peace and unity to her country. When Catherine Samba Panza took the oath of office in January 2014, Central African Republic was in a dire state. The country has been torn apart by sectarian violence that left thousands of people dead and hundreds of thousands displaced. Earlier this month, during a ceremony marking her first year in office, she recalled what was being said of the country by analysts at the time.
International Crisis Group qualifiait la RCA d'état fantôme.
She says the International Crisis Group called CAR a phantom state, that it was not even a fragile state anymore, but a phantom one, even a fictive one. A year later, some improvements have been made, but a lot of challenges remain. Security has improved, notably thanks to the deployment of international forces, yet the situation remains very fragile with regular outbreaks of violence. Mrs. Samba Panza also admitted that the inter-community dialogue between anti-Balakas and Seleka groups has been difficult.
Dès le début de notre mandat, nous avons lancé l'appel aux anti-Balaka et aux Seleka.
She says since the beginning of her government, she has called to anti-Balaka and Seleka. She says she kept her arms wide open throughout the entire year, but now her arms are getting tired and no one really responds. The dialogue has been made all the more difficult as the two armed groups fragment themselves into ever smaller armed factions. For Dieudonné Kpamo, historian at the University of Bangui, the transition government has been too weak to be heard and really make a difference.
Très, très faible, vous n'exagérez pas. On est dans une période où il n'y a pas véritablement de justice.
He says that it is an understatement to say the government is weak. He says the country is in a period where there is still no real justice, with no tribunal or police force in place, and no prefect or mayors. Mrs. Samba Panza also admitted that the Disarmament, Demobilization and Reintegration Program, or DDR, has not reached its goal and should be rethought. A lot of arms are still circulating in the CAR, fueling insecurity and banditry. The transition period was meant to end in February 2015, but has been extended for 6 months in order to reach the objectives assigned, and the agenda is busy. Among the goals mentioned by the interim president, rebuilding the institution, establishing a new constitution, and meeting the deadlines for general elections, now planned for later this year. Emily Yob for VON News in Bangui.
It's 25 minutes past the hour. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Monday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Sports News, we focus on the Orange Africa Cup of Nations in Equatorial Guinea. A second-half penalty converted by Javier Balbao and a goal from substitute Yvonne Salvador powered Equatorial Guinea to a 2-0 win over Gabon in a Central Africa derby in Bata on Sunday. Meanwhile, in the other Group 8 tie in Ebebiyin, second-half goals scored by Bifuka Kamusa and Fabrice Ondama, together with a late consolation goal by substitute Aristide Banz, secured the Republic of Congo's 2-1 triumph over Burkina Faso. The Congolese top group with 7 points. Equatorial Guinea has 5, Gabon 3, and Burkina Faso 1 point. Republic of Congo advanced to the quarterfinals for the first time since 1992, while Equatorial Guinea joined them in the last 8. In Malabo, defender Bakari Sako scored in the 7th minute before second-half substitute Maxine Alain Gradel replied with 3 minutes to the end of play as Ivory Coast from behind to hold Mali to a 1-0 draw in Malabo on Saturday. The pattern was repeated in the other Group D tie when Benjamin Mwanza put Cameroon ahead in the 13th minute before Guinea's captain Ibrahim Traore leveled the score just before halftime. The four teams in this group are deadlocked, having each drawn twice with identical scorelines of 1-1. Each needs to an outright win in their final group tie to progress to the quarterfinals. In Mongomo, captain Asamoah Gyan was Ghana's hero when he scored barely a minute to the end of referee's additional time to lift the Black Stars to a 1-0 win over Algeria on Friday. Later, Senegal and South Africa played to a 1-1 draw in the other Group C tie. Senegal topped the group with 4 points. Algeria and Ghana tie on 3 points. However, Algeria are ahead on account of a better goal average, while South Africa has 1 point. Finally, Tunisia played the Democratic Republic of Congo in Bata as Zambia faced Cape Verde Islands in Ebebiyin. In the last Group B preliminaries today, Monday, Tunisia lead the group with 4 points. The Democratic Republic of Congo and Cape Verde Islands are tied on 2 points and have an identical goal difference, while Zambia has 1 point. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Here's our listener mail for this Monday morning, January 26th.
I wish to thank American Secretary of State, Mr. Kerry, for coming to Nigeria. And I thank God for his discussion with the Nigerian government. I pray all the discussions will work well according to God's plan. Thank you, Mr. Kerry, for coming to Nigeria. Comrade Mass Patrick Okorocraft, over blue premises at Tane Arachuku in Abia State, Nigeria.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry says the United States will continue to support the Nigerian military in the fight against Boko Haram. Mr. Kerry, who arrived Sunday in the Nigerian city of Lagos, spoke shortly after Nigerian troops repelled an attack by Boko Haram militants on the outskirts of Borno state capital of Maiduguri. That's it for this Monday, January 26th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as post editor Mark Ouma, along with our engineer Dave Magnus. I'm James Butter in Washington, wishing you a very good week.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, Zambians have elected their next president following the sudden death of Michael Sata. We'll discuss the results and the copper-producing nation's future next time on VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm Sunday Shomari. Next on Let's Talk, In Lows. In Lows is a topic we'll discuss in our new light-hearted show, Let's Talk. So join me, Sunday Shomari, and my guests as we explore In Lows with some hilarity. That's Let's Talk, Monday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.